Welcome to the Fuller Chasing Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 30th of October, and I'm recording at an unusually early 5:27 p.m. And that's because I've got to host a birthday party for a couple of friends, very small party. But this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook, and there's plenty to discuss here. I'll just give you a quick rundown on what's happened here more recently. It has, of course, as you know, been a very good month for stock markets. Now, they started October really in, the pits of despair. Is that too melodramatic? Possibly not. But at any rate, a very persistent rally, and led by Wall Street, that pushed stochastic indicators, which you can see in the chart library, of course, from a deeply oversold condition, which had first been reached, the actual real lows, of course, were on the 24th in the U.S. of August. And then knocking on to the 25th and 26th in Europe and Asia. But those lows were being tested. And say we got this strong, persistent rally, which covered most of the month. And Wall Street's still very steady. As I speak to you now, we have modest gains on the U.S. market, and that's reversing some an earlier slide that we had actually seen. We got the NASDAQ composite index really right back on its previous all-time highs seen a couple of months ago. So, what else is going on here? We have seen in Asia, in the Asia-Pacific region, markets have been a little bit softer over the last week. There's some five-day declines. And among bigger markets, those include India. Nothing too scary, but that's certainly a break with the strength that we'd seen earlier on in the month. And actually, India has done quite well over the last few months. So I don't think this is anything other than a normal reaction and consolidation. And we may see that, I think we will definitely see that from more markets overall. HSCEI, those are the China H shares, they've also slipped a little bit over the last five days here. And when you get a persistent overbought condition on the stochastics lasting for really over 3 weeks, that tends to be followed by small reactions and consolidations. But the main point is I don't think there's anything really too much to worry about in terms of overall market action. But that said, there are always trouble spots. And it's best just to have a quick look at those. Hopefully, trouble spots remain relatively minor, or at least they don't have a global reach. But there's always a possibility that they can reach it a little bit further. One of them, which hopefully will remain quite minor, but you never know about these things, is the China military buildup that's taken place in the South China Sea. And one really wonders why that needs to be taking place at all. It would have been imaginable, or more easily imaginable, if the entire world was worried about its energy security, and China may well have worried about that in earlier years, but now we're awash with the stuff. And I think that's one of the really big changes that will be very good for global GDP growth, not only in next year or over the next few years, but over the rest of our lives, dare I say, and beyond. The more worrying hotspot here at this time is what's going on in the Middle East. I mean, we're used to the Middle East being in a more or less semi-permanent period of chaos, but it's more unstable here now than ever before. And a lot of that, of course, is to do with the collapse in the price of oil, which, okay, Saudi Arabia helped to engineer that, but it would have happened anyway. Because technology has meant that lots of countries, again led by the US, have been able to find much more oil and also gas, and to produce it far more efficiently. And then, of course, there's the whole fracking system that has been building up, which is it's really opened the door to a supply of oil that will last decades if people wish to tap it or are even allowed to tap it. There's some talk that that climate change administrators, such as they are, may well force some significant reductions in the use of fossil fuels over the next few decades. I hope that isn't necessary, but it could be, and that is a possibility. But the point is that aware of that possibility or risk, the technology has led to rapid development in renewables, led by solar, which becomes steadily more efficient. And this is a very good thing in terms of global GDP growth over the longer term. But getting back to the Middle East here, there, well, I posted Ian Little's A Diary of a Fund Manager yesterday, and he was quoting Charles Gove extensively in that paper, saying that Russia's Putin, of course, has been angling to destabilize the Sunni oil producers in the Middle East as part of an effort to get the price of oil higher. I wouldn't say that's impossible, but the fact is that what we've seen in the past is that it's very difficult to significantly disrupt oil production from the Middle East. It can happen in one or two countries, usually some of the smaller countries, but we haven't had a major disruption. But the risk of a major disruption is probably higher than it was previously. And even if that does not occur, lower prices can be very destabilizing in a region where we have not had democratic regimes, and there are large populations that have sort of been bought off. With the excess revenues coming in from oil, it's a recipe for unrest. Let's put it that way. I don't want to overemphasize it, but that's the major hotspot that I think is known that we need to just to keep an eye on, and it could easily push oil prices somewhat higher. But you know what will happen if oil prices were to push higher, and inevitably they will from time to time. And I'm put it in perspective. I'm talking not the $200 that Charles Gove mentioned, but I'm talking about going up to $70, $80. Then a lot of new oil can come on stream very, very quickly, and not least from fracking. Okay, now, what are we likely to see as we end this October period? That's the which has been, as you know, and as I mentioned earlier, a very good month. But we also know that May through October, end October, seasonally, is a period of underperformance. Well, certainly the first 5 months were. And what lies ahead? Well, we are moving into a period of the year which seasonally is known for its outperformance, and that is, of course, the November through through what am I going to, through April, and I think that there are no reasons to be overly pessimistic here about what we actually see going ahead. My guess is that we could see short-term consolidations in stock markets, as I've already mentioned, and then I think we'll see higher levels here overall. Will we see dramatically higher levels? Probably not, because we have a number of other factors in addition to the Middle East uncertainty that I was talking about. But we could also we have a slow growth environment overall. We're also getting the probability of a interest rate hike in December from the USA. That, in many respects, w is a positive sign, and I hope it will be interpreted as a positive sign by stock markets. But it can lead to a little bit of uncertainty because, let's face it, we haven't had an interest rate hike in the USA for over 9 years. And so there's bound to be a little bit of apprehension about that going forward. But I think that the bigger concerns that have worried people, I think people have overplayed the deflationary threat. You might wonder how I could say that, given how low bond yields have actually been and how low the inflation pressures have actually been. But I would just repeat a point that I have made in other big picture audios, that there's a lot of positive disinflationary or deflationary factors out there, and that's mainly technology. And one of the reasons why commodity prices, for instance, are so low is not just that demand is not all that robust for some of them, particularly in terms of China's demand for industrial commodities. But the far more important reason for the very low levels is because production's always the key variable with commodities over the cycles. It's so much easier to produce the stuff. It can be produced so much more cheaply because of the huge technological advantages, which have made mining, oil drilling, and so on just vastly more efficient than we have seen in the past. And these are good things. These are bullish factors for the longer term. My guess is that global GDP growth will pick up marginally in 2016, and I think the U.S. is likely to be at the at the forefront of that. I don't think China's economy is as weak as many people feel that it is likely to be. It's hard to get the data, you know, and it's a we know in smaller countries, far smaller countries, it's very difficult to get all the data accurately, and we know how subject the data is to revisions. And with China, huge country, it's very much a guessing game much of the time. And various analysts are looking at different signs, such as shipping obviously coming in and going out of China. But it is difficult to keep an eye on it. And I've also read in a number of places that it's harder to monitor changes in consumer demand, particularly in what is a developing country on its way to becoming very much a developed economy. And so, in other words, if consumer spending is strong, you don't see it as quickly as you do if there's a pickup in manufacturing activity. I'll put it that way. But my own view is that sure, China's GDP growth has slowed, but it is probably certainly stronger than the big short sellers, hedge funds, are saying about it. And I think that we may be pleasantly surprised. In China growing at 4 or 5% a year, that would, I think, be a pleasant or reassuring development in 2016. And that's an enviable rate of growth for most countries. So again, I think that the worries that people have had about global stock markets are somewhat exaggerated. That would not be true, though, of the resources producers. Because yes, we can, the world can produce these resources more cheaply, but this is causing major problems. Obviously, the oil industry, that's a key example, and that also applies to all the metal exporting countries as well. And also, food prices have been relatively cheap. Here overall, because we haven't had any major crop disasters beyond isolated isolated regions. Okay, so I think that I'm just saying that I think the environment in 2016 will be not too bad overall, and with slightly improved growth, and I think that it should be a reasonable year for stock markets. A U.S. election cycle should be a positive influence overall. Excuse me. What is a risk, though, I think most definitely, is government bonds. And we have these rock bottom yields. People have been building positions in those markets for 3.5 decades. They've done exceedingly well. I tip my hat to them, as I've said before. There are big risks, though, when you're down with yields of under 2%, and in some countries, well, Japan, bond yields down to 0.31. That's near their historic lows. Germany, the yields are incredibly low. And those US 10-year yields, as you just mentioned today, because they had moved upwards in Wednesday and Thursday, but 2.15 is the US 10-year today, 2.15. And I'll just mention in the same breath, albeit punctuated by a cough, the VIX index is at a reasonably healthy, comfortable level of 14.08. But going back to bonds, my concern is that people have been lulled into a false sense of security, feeling that these yields may never push higher or may not push higher over the medium term, which I'll define here as the next couple of years. I think those yields will almost certainly push higher over the next 2 to 3 years. I've described this market as in a base building phase, talking about US Treasuries now, as in a base building phase with a very long fuse. And what we're likely to get as sentiment does change and more people decide to move to the exits, cash in their profits, in other words, that we could get a sharp rise that causes a little bit of a little bit of pandemonium. I don't think we're going to get huge rises Well, put it in perspective, we're not going to get anything like what we saw back in the 1980s and 1990s, but we could get yields pushing from 2% to 4%, for instance, in the US. And that, of course, is a very, very significant change indeed. And above 4%, I think that would be a threat to stock markets overall. But what's taking place, or what I'm feeling, what I'm forecasting, what is very likely to take place, is that we'll see a gradual, as in taking period of 2 to 3 years, normalization of interest rate cycles. And that means that government bond yields will be pushing higher. That makes government bond yields risky on a longer term basis. I've said it before, and it hasn't happened yet, but I've also said throughout it's a long fuse, but things can change very quickly when a sort of fearful form of market psychology takes over. We've seen that plenty of times in stock markets. We haven't seen it in bond markets for a long time, but it is out there, and I would be very, very careful. I would much rather have high-yielding equities and put up with a certain amount of volatility, which can play into your hands. Just buy low, sell high. Okay. What about some of these other markets? What about currencies? We have seen at least a temporary bottoming of those Latin American commodity producers, and in terms of their currencies, and those are very oversold. It's also occurring with at least tentative bottoming activity shown by the commodity indices such as the CCI and the CRY in indices. I think we also see that in crude oil prices, extremely important, and they're a little firmer in here today, as well. So I just think that we know the factors that pushed commodity prices so low. There was a softening of demand, but the big variable was the technology that made it so much easier to produce these commodities. And I think that that was aided and abetted by a lot of computerized selling in those markets. And those positions are now in various stages of being covered. And in other words, I think we've seen the bottom of the commodity cycle. It's just a matter of how much or what type of recovery we actually see. Is it more of a spike? As in a spike down and then a spike back up. Well, I think we would see some of that and some sideways ranging activity. But the chances are, a year from now, these commodities will, for the most part, be higher. And I would put crude oil in that camp. I'd put the industrial metals in that camp. And I think also precious metals. Quite likely to be in that same camp, and agricultural commodities, but with depending on the huge vagaries that we get with crop cycles. But it would take very, very good crop cycles to push agricultural commodities even lower. So what will that do? Well, that will bring in a little bit more inflation, and that will reassure some people. It will reduce the perpetual disinflationary, deflationary fears that have been widely expressed. And commodities will be, if I'm right in this forecast, so keep your eye on the commodities and the commodity indices, because they have been a hugely influential factor in pushing down those inflation pressures. So just a decent medium-term rally across the boards in the commodity sector would certainly revive those inflationary pressures. I think most analysts would be reassured by that. I don't think it would hurt stock markets, but it would hurt government bonds. And I'll just make that emphasize that point once again. And what are we likely to see? Let's take a little bit of creative, futuristic look at what actually happens going down the longer term road. I feel that, and I've said this before, that before the end of this decade, we will have very clear evidence of a new lease of life on a bull market cycle. I've said all along that I felt that we would be seeing a developing secular bull market. The last secular bull market ran from 1982 into 1990, 1999. And you know how choppy and disconcerting markets have been subsequently in here overall. This is a classic pattern, long-term pattern that is repeated. We prior to that 82 secular bull market, we saw the previous secular bull market to that occurring really in the beginning really in the late 1940s and 1950s, and running well on into the mid 60s before it spilled over into a lengthy corrective phase and valuation contraction cycle. So again, we are in the foothills, I think, still of what will be a secular bull market cycle for equities. That has to have drivers. The drivers can change from cycle to cycle, but the big drivers, or the biggest driver of all here, will be technological innovation. And we are still very much in an era of accelerating technological innovation. And people thought I was nuts when I first was talking about that over 5, 6 years ago. But I think you can see the evidence on an almost daily basis, all the new technical advancements that are actually occurring. And you think back 10 or 20 years, let alone to your childhood, and you don't have to be as old as I am, you know, to see the huge changes that have taken place in terms of rate of technological development. And that is very, very good for corporations. It's also good for individuals and households, but the corporations will be the biggest beneficiaries of all. We also have the cheaper energy that's due entirely to the technological accelerated rate of technological development. And so we're facing a long, probably a permanent era of generally lower energy prices in real terms. And that's extremely positive for growth. Everybody benefits from that, and not least the corporations. Then there's the global rise in middle classes, and that's a very favorable factor. So I think certainly there are more than enough significant developments here to cause that secular bull market cycle. And secular bull markets, as in very long term, 2, 3 decades, sometimes a little more, those are inevitably punctuated by some cyclical bear phases. Classic example from the last secular bull market in 1987. At the time, a lot of people thought it was the end of the world. It doesn't look like anything on the charts. It didn't have any knock-on economic effect, but it was a market panic. And we will see those from time to time. Best way to protect against that? buy low. Buy when there's blood in the streets. I also said that at the beginning of this month. It's a point always to remember and sell when everybody's talking about your favorite positions and they're accelerating upwards from up and away from their rising 200-day moving averages. Or if you don't sell them, put in trailing stops, and so that you don't give up too much on the mean reversion moves. And on that note, well, Pete, myself, it's been a good month, and I look forward to many more. And meanwhile, have a great weekend, and all the very best to all of you.